Okay, it's the best of the year episode. This notion that's going around that year-end best of lists are passé or blah, that's not true, okay? You click those lists, you read them, you get excited, you get a big pile of books you want to read, okay?
And 2 years later, I read them.
Exactly, okay? Now, when this posts, it will only have been 2014 for 1 week, so it's going to be a short episode. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually the best of last year.
Oh.
And we didn't do this in December because Crystal had that really good idea of why don't we do like family members or lovers that create things together. I just thought that was a really cool idea because like how do you do like a holiday episode that's inclusive, you know? It was a good idea. We hadn't done that before. I wanted to go there. So January, best of the year. And that's all I'm going to say. And at the end, we're going to wax poetic about anything else that happened in 2013 that we want to talk about that you can't check out at the library. But first, me and Bill are going to plug some movies.
Okay, come to Movies at Maine. We're going to show The Last Mimsy. It's going to be shown Saturday, January 11th, 2014 at 2 p.m. Briefly, it's about two siblings who begin to develop special talents after they find a mysterious box of toys. Soon the kids, their parents, and even their teachers are drawn into a strange new world and find a task ahead of them that is far more important than any of them could imagine. It's 90 minutes long, rated PG, and don't miss our Legends of Film interview with the director, Robert Shay. He's a very nice man. He talks about this film, but what's better about Robert Shay, he was also founder and CEO of New Line Cinema, so he had some interesting stories to tell. Back to you, Brian.
So that same day, we're going to be right in the middle of Hunger Awareness Month here at the library, and that also means food for fines, so start hoarding your canned goods to come in and get your fines paid off. There's going to be basically hunger awareness programs all over the library system, but at Maine that same day, I'm going to show A Place at the Table, an awesome movie about hunger in Nashville. Come down to see it. T-Burn Burnett did the soundtrack. It's free. Stay for Bill's movie. It's amazing. Double feature at the library Saturday, January 11th. Best books of the year. Fiction. Mike, what you got?
I have a science fiction novel called Ancillary Justice about an artificial intelligence that far in the future. An artificial intelligence that has command of like dozens of starships and little fighters and these weird like cyborg zombie bodies basically dies. But before dying, it sends off one of its weird cyborg human bodies and vows revenge on it, you know, most of it dying, kind of. I really liked it because it had a unique take on gender and language, of all things. Like, the artificial intelligence, its primary language has no gender in it. So instead of picking a gender for other people when it's translating to us, it just calls everybody she and her and daughter. So, it, you know, for about half the book, I'm like, there should, you know, are there any men in the – oh, right. Thought that was clever. Anyway, so what do you have?
I have The Circle by Dave Eggers. The Circle is his first foray into science fiction, and rather than looking 100 years into the future, he presents a reality that is totally recognizable and could be at most 10 years into the future. It tells the story of May Holland, a wide-eyed 20-something who goes to work for mega-tech company The Circle, and you can pretty much replace The Circle with Google or Facebook or some kind of combination of the two. The Circle comes across as a social media cult that aims to expand its reach to the entire culture, thereby closing the circle. Comparisons to 1984 are there, but the circle updates the classic to imagine how we could achieve this through social media tools. But it's really a chilling thing. Oh, and it uses a lot of the same like doublespeak phrases like privacy is theft and secrets are lies. It's this, yeah, really chilling book.
I'd read that book and probably like it. Yeah. So, you know, I talked about it already. I wrote about it on the blog, but the Mad Atom trilogy by Margaret Atwood was my favorite fiction of the year. It's like whenever Matt Adam came out, it was the one book I was really excited about. And it's a true trilogy. You know, I think she's rich and famous enough. She doesn't have to have one book and then, you know, keep humping the cash cow. She has a story to tell. It took her three books. And, you know, the very last chapter, I always listen to them on audio. The very last chapter is actually read by a child actor. And it's a child trying to interpret these really traumatic events. It was really sad and I cried. But long-term listeners of the podcast know that I cry out really easily. So it's pretty, it's pretty easy. But
do you cry during the podcast?
Not yet. but so
right. Things that make Brian cry.
You know, Robbie Dunn was the child actor that made me cry, and Matt Adam, audio version. So, Amanda, what you got?
Mine's audio, too. I read it over the summer. Beauty Queens by Libba Bray, and I'm still kind of mad that A, I didn't write it, and B, I didn't read it, because it was just enjoyable. Like, basically the premise, you take Miss Congeniality and you take Lost and you mash them together. Except, you know, you have a good ending and they don't all end up in purgatory somewhere. So, very exciting. I don't know if I didn't read the book. Like, I just did the audio version, so I don't know if the book would be as exciting by itself. But get the audio. It's read by the author, and it's just a high-quality item. So, what you got, Bill?
So we're doing fiction. I've got a nonfiction.
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Go for it. Okay. Yeah. The book I'm recommending is Circle of Six, the true story of New York's most notorious cop killer and the cop who risked everything to catch him, by Randy Jurgensen and Robert Say. Circle of Six, now this is from the Amazon.com website. Circle of Six is the true story of the most notorious case in the history of New York Police Department. The book details Detective Randy Jurgensen's effort to bring to justice patrolman Philip Cardillo's murderer. Now, I read this book to prepare for an interview I had with Randy Jurgensen, and when I interviewed Mr. Jurgensen, we talked about arresting Lenny Bruce, working the French Connection case, but we never got around to his book. So we have Circle of Six on order. I highly recommend the books. And just to give a little plug, please listen to my interview to Randy Jurgensen, which will be in March of this year. He was technical advisor on a movie that we'll be showing called Report to the Commissioner.
I dig it. Mike, nonfiction.
All right. It was tricky for me to find nonfiction that was good enough for me to recommend, so I'll have to go with Super Graphic. It's basically different kinds of charts and graphs relating to comic books, all kinds of comic books from like American typical superhero stuff to indie comics to Japanese manga and in between. And I thought it was really neat that different color variations, like as I recall, most good guys wear really bright primary colors while bad guys wear whatever those mixed colors like purple.
It's because bad guys have style.
They have flair. So they have to be beaten up repeatedly. I was unaware that there are certain manga that are the best-selling books on Earth that, you know, that you don't really hear about that sort of thing. So Super Graphic. Very cool.
So I endorse Super Graphic. It's really good. And, you know, the publisher of Super Graphic Chronicle Books actually sent us a really cool poster. But that was after we already reviewed it on the website and said it was really cool. So thank you, Chronicle Books. I mentioned this before, but my favorite nonfiction book of the year was Assimilate, Critical History of Industrial Music by S. Alexander Reed. Awesome book, long overdue. I think it's kind of a niche audience, but if you're interested, if you go to the I Die, You Die website, don't be put off by the name. It's actually a really smart, fun website. They have a hour and a half interview with S. Alexander Reed, and it's basically just the gloss of the book, and he goes into more depth to the bands that he wishes he could have written more about, who he wanted to interview and he didn't, and a lot of the themes of the book, he expounds upon them. So if you want to go even deeper, I'll link to that.
Well, I think that we can admit that we're all nerds here.
Speak for yourself.
It's not a big surprise. You're a library podcast. That's what we do. But my favorite nonfiction book may take our nerddom to a whole new level. It's called Storm Kings by Lee Sandlin. And basically, it's the history of the U.S. Weather Bureau, kind of how the scientists came to study tornadoes, like clear back to the 1700s. Like people were, you know, saw a tornado and go off on horseback and chase it. Because, you know, that's what you do when you see a tornado, is you get on your horse and follow it to see where it goes. So it is pretty heavy into weather jargon and math, and I'm not sure that people that want, like, hardcore tornado-chasing action would be pulled into it. But I was, and it was the first book of the year that I remember that I was really sad when it ended. Like, I didn't want it to stop. So that was Storm Kings. My favorite part was there was a chapter on the night that Chicago burned down, in like with Mrs. O'Leary's cow and all that. Like, there was this huge fire tornado that wiped out Peshtigo, Wisconsin. And that was, if you want action, that had everything you want in that chapter. But some of the others were a little dry. So check that out.
Is the movie Twister accurate in terms of the scientific research?
It's accurate as far as the idea goes, but I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if you remember the El Reno tornado earlier this year, that those two storm chasers died. There were two storm chasers and a photographer that were sucked up into the Twister and died. And, like, one of the guys on the Weather Channel got sucked up into it, and they lived. But they were trying to put the pod down in front of it, and it was an F5, so that was bad. But then it took a hinky turn, and they couldn't get out of the way. It was just too big, and so we lost some storm chasers this year. So the idea is there. I'm not sure the rest of the science is. The tornadoes were fake, too, by the way.
What?
But the cows still flew by.
Right? Yes, the cows really did fly.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the important part.
Wipe sweat off, bro.
Bill, do you have a music pick?
My music selection started out by listening to a book on CD called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life by Graham Nash, read by Mr. Nash. Of course, Graham Nash is famous for The Hollies and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and of course, Sometimes Young. I love the audiobooks because Graham Nash, you could tell, had a real passion. His passion in life is his music, and that came through in his reading. It got him out of poverty, and it's what keeps him going today. It's when I listen to James Garner's book, his biography, the only real passion he had in life, he thought, was his golf game. So it got me to listening to Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And among the CDs we have in the system, Crosby and Nash, Reflections, CSN, Deja Vu Live, and Voyage. And if that's not enough, it's just kind of ironic I was going to pick this anyway. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, they're coming to the Ryman Auditorium Friday, March 21st. So I'm recommending Crosby, Stills, Nash. And I'm also recommending the Wild Tales of Rock and Roll Life by Graham Nash, read by himself. Excellent, excellent book if you're going on a trip.
Greg, music?
My music's kind of long, but I've kind of sat out some of them, so I'm going to go for it. All right, my pick is Reflector by the art pop supergroup Arcade Fire. Arcade Fire Reflector has been a much anticipated, much hyped follow-up to 2011's Grammy Award-winning The Suburbs. But while the band has had a consistent output of anthem-packed albums, I think this one achieves something new. It finds the band teaming up with producer James Murphy, better known as the force behind LCD Sound System, which was a great alternative dance band that retired in 2011. And it features a lot of his dancey electronic fingerprints. The title track also features a brief cameo by David Bowie, who, as rumor has it, was just happened to be in the studio at the time of recording. Having him on the album is a perfect in a way, because on one level it's about fame and how when you're famous you can spend so much of the time creating a persona that you become a reflection of how you want to be seen. So that's Bowie in a nutshell. Back to the circle discussion. The album also clearly deals with a false sense of connection that is so often felt through social media, and how Facebook can sort of become a reflection of how you want to be seen.
You're getting really deep here, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this is so
pull up a chair.
I mean, yeah, they have some big themes that they tie in, so.
Okay, I like Amanda's pick better.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. Something like, sorry, keep going.
We got a long way to go through here, so I'll include a little stanza here and leave it at that. So it's the signals we send are deflected again. We're still connected, but are we even friends? We fell in love when I was 19 and I was staring at a screen. So, yeah, I could get into Kierkegaard too. There's references to Kierkegaard, but we can cut that out.
That's cool. You need to get into that late period Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Not as melodic as Arcade Fire, though.
No. Yeah. I dig in both.
Is there more?
Well, I mean, I could, you know.
Keep going.
It takes the name from the Kierkegaard album called, or Kierkegaard. Never released an album, the essay titled Present Life, which was Kierkegaard's criticism of his age, which he saw as being overly self-obsessed and contemplative.
Sounds like Kierkegaard's to me.
So. I was like the one, like, that dude doesn't get to write an essay about that. anyway.
Totally.
I liked his first album, Live at Red Rocks.
Oh, also check out, there's some awesome music videos that go along with this album. Check those out.
So I was going to talk about this, like, really awesome, you know, self-published, you know, home-recorded musical artist that I like, but their webpage got taken down by a fake Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown notice, so I can't talk about them. Amanda, what do you got?
I had a pretty good year for music. I would give a shout-out to Sarah Bareilles' The Beautiful Unrest that had the song Brave on it, that Katy Perry redid as Roar. But then I'd also mention Imagine Dragons' Night Visions that had Radioactive, which Mike had mentioned earlier. But I think my favorite album of the year has got to be Daft Punk's Random Access Memory, which is downloadable on Freegal in its entirety. And that's kind of a change for me. That's not usually my normal style of music, but they just got some catchy tunes on it.
So it's like Daft Punk, that was what I was referring to when I said I like it, man, it's better. Okay. Like,
Greg, no Kierkegaard in
mine,
though.
Yeah, Greg started talking about Kierkegaard, and I was like, where's Daft Punk?
No, I love that album, too, and I think that I would like to see that single, Get Lucky, added to like the canon of like wedding songs.
I didn't play it at my wedding because I'm like, I had all my grandparents were there, and I told them, I said, you can play Daft Punk, but I don't want that one.
So the other thing too, I read your review of Daft Punk that you wrote on the blog, and I was we can't do it now today, but like it'd be good to have a discussion of like, so what makes a good dance song with a really simple beat good as opposed to one that's boring. Right, that's really that's a good discussion to have. Anyway, well, I don't think we should have it now, should we?
You can put it in the comments.
Yeah, you can put it
in the comments.
Yeah, it's a rhetorical question you can answer in the comments.
How do you like dance tunes? Go.
That album also is like, it's so strongly like referencing like, you know, soul funk music from the late,
it's very 70s.
Late 70s, 80s. That's like, what are they adding to it, really? I mean,
you can tell it's modern, though. I mean, like, you can tell that it's got a 2013 spin on.
They have drum machines and vocoders, and that's as far as I can tell, that's the update.
Yeah, and there's a little, I mean, stylistically, there's a little bit of modernization going on, but it's definitely funk underneath all that. George Clinton wouldn't be proud.
Oh, yeah.
There's a really good book called Retromania. That's an entire book of, you know, there's nothing is new in music anymore.
My mom's been saying that for years. It's sickening.
You know, yeah. Well, the thing with Daft Punk, I think a lot of ways they are like a concept band, and the names of their albums are like very meta always. Mm-hmm. So like Random Access Memories, and then they reference old music, you know, and Discovery was like very disco reversing. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Okay. Are we ready to move on to movies, films, cinema?
Motion pictures.
Darkened theaters.
Scary.
Are we ready to do that?
Sure. Do it.
Oh. Yes.
Bill, do you want to start?
Sure. My movie pick for this year, I've got several, but one that's standing out, it's not getting enough acclaim here at the end, I think, is Prisoners, which stars Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, Viola Davis, Maria Bello. The premise is two couples with children meet to have Thanksgiving dinner. As the day proceeds, the two youngest children go missing. Where did they go? Who took them? What lurks in the dark underbelly of this normal American town? Love the movie right down to its really kick-butt ending. I just loved how this movie ended. I won't spoil it for you, but once again, I highly recommend the movie Prisoners.
Yeah, I too had problems just picking one, but I finally settled on a movie that came out towards the beginning of the year. It was so early, like in February, I think. I forgot that it was this year. Upstream Color. Which was amazing, but it's kind of tricky to describe because part of the fun for me is that it's a very visual movie, and you kind of have to figure out what's going on just based on, I mean, you don't really figure out what's going on until maybe halfway through, and even then it's kind of puzzling. If you liked the filmmaker Shane Carruth's previous film, Primer, I think you liked this one too. I really liked the whole, you know, it's very unique, I guess. But I guess if you want like a plot summary in a nutshell, a woman tries out like a new kind of drug and gets more than she bargained for. Mwahaha.
That is like, okay. That movie gets so much weirder than that, my man.
Starting at the very, you know, that's part of the fun for me, is figure out what was going on. Okay, I don't want to like, you know, tell people, hey, this is what it's about. And then
you didn't even get into the whole like pig worms thing, right? and the whole like
mind control
pig worms and pig telepathy and
You lost me at pig worms.
Exactly. So
I was in on color, but you lost me at pig worms.
You know, the interconnectedness of life.
The one thing that just kind of got me about the movies, I don't think, you know, the director should have cast himself as the lead. That's just me.
That was a little weird, but then again, I didn't even know until like later on after I'd seen it that it was like, oh, that was him. Oh.
It's like sometimes it's like an audiobook. It's better to just hire a professional actor. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, well.
What do I know? I don't know anything about acting.
My audiobook was read by the author and it was really good.
Well, sometimes, right?
She does voices, though. So.
Yeah, sometimes.
There's a lot of actors that can really overact an audiobook, though, and that can really ruin a.
Whatever do you mean? Acting, sir, is a gift.
Peter O'Toole reads Kierkegaard. was that it?
That's it for me.
I always feel like I interrupt.
That's the fun of the podcast.
All right. Well,
don't yawn. It's your time to go.
Go.
Okay. Well, I don't really see a lot of movies in the theater because I'm poor, but one that I happened to see was All Is Lost, and that's the Robert Redford Lost in the Middle of the Ocean movie. So while Gravity is topping a lot of critics' picks for its technical marvel, All Is Lost achieves the same feeling of isolation without 3D or CG. After Robert Redford's yacht, I'm just going to keep calling him Robert Redford, tears a hole in the middle of the Indian Ocean, he must battle storms and face the limitations of body and mind, unaided by modern technology. That's the theme of my reviews here. The isolation is taken one step further as there is only one spoken word in the entire movie, and I'll not give away what it is, and it's not Rosebud. It's impressively shot with a great score with some dude from Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, which they had a hit a couple years ago. It has nothing to do with that. Yeah, it has the effect of making you feel like you're lost with him. Thematically, it's a cross between Oscar winner Life of Pi and what is sure to be this year's nominee, Gravity. So if you haven't seen either, just watch All Is Lost.
I thought it was quite good. I liked that that you watched him. He didn't like talk about like, oh, I've got to go get the wrench, or oh, I've got to fix the sail. He goes and does it. It seems like more of a real life thing that, you know, if you were in that situation, you wouldn't start talking to yourself all the time.
Or you didn't talk to a volleyball. This.
Yeah,
soccer ball.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really clever choice on the filmmaker's part. Although I disagree, I liked Gravity better.
Ooh, throwing down the gauntlet.
That's right.
Popping the gauntlet right there.
I like All Is Lost better.
Oh.
I've got two fists. I could take them both.
I'm 0-2. I haven't seen either.
Well, I mean, Gravity was almost like something different. You know, like for a lot of the movie, you're just seeing like the actor's face, and then everything else is CG. You know, like. It's a totally different thing. So.
No CG. We're out on a boat. No
That's fake right.
tigers on this boat either. One Just camera. The elements. Can I be morbid? Can I get like a
Hello,
maybe man. A emotionally insensitive pass for once?
For once?
For once.
We're just like, for one time, is that okay? Is that not okay? But I just thought about, like, if Redford had died during the filming of that movie, it would have been, like, epic, right? Anyway, okay. Forgive me. I'm sorry. All right. Okay.
Wow. We're still talking about like, the guy who died like during the Twilight Zone movie.
Or he gets, like, the whole way to the end, right? And then he has a heart attack and dies for real, right? And then it's epic. Not that it wasn't epic anyway. I couldn't help but to think that. He's old, okay. Sorry. I apologize.
That was a
surprise. I love Robert Redford.
I'm a monster. I apologize. Okay.
The police will be showing up after this podcast.
Which seems like horrible to think about. Oh my God. I'm gonna throw down right now. You guys were not thinking that.
I honestly was not thinking that.
There goes my only chance to interview Robert Redford.
That stupid kid on your podcast said he wanted me to die when I did the best performance of my entire career.
Okay, well, you tell him.
To receive something in the mail from him.
It's not going to be a really cool poster.
I don't want you showing the great Waldo Pepper.
Mr. Redford, I hope you live for many more years and make many great movies. Okay, Amanda.
Okay, so my movie, Brian and I had to thumb wrestle over who was going to get to talk about it, because I'm sure that we both loved it. So I think it actually came out in 2012, but it was at the end of the year, so this totally counts because I didn't watch it till January. So, of course, I'm talking about the wonderful movie Pitch Perfect, starring Anna Kendrick. And if you haven't seen it, you should. And if you haven't heard the soundtrack, you should get it, because we have it. We have both. And I'm actually still spinning the soundtrack every now and again on my – I don't know if it's called spinning, if it's on your MP3 player, but – I press play and sound comes out. But it isn't, it's aca-fabulous, if you will. Very enjoyable. Not deep on any level. No one dies or should die or thinks about dying.
I didn't think that he should die.
But, I would watch Pitch Perfect then.
Well, okay. But would you sing while you did it? Because it's an excellent sing-along movie, which is why I like it.
So was when you say acapellist, you mean acapella? Because I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, basically the premise is they're in college and there are like several groups of acapella choirs that go around competing. It's kind of like Glee, but in college and with better singers.
I dig it.
Aca, awesome.
My favorite movie of the year was Spring Breakers, and I think this movie was really misinterpreted. I think it was actually really morally profound, as like a really morally profound comment on the sexualization of girls and violence and race relations or lack thereof in America. Or I think that it's totally legit to watch that movie and think everything that's wrong in our country with those issues is what that movie was about. And that movie could actually be both things at the same time. And that's why it's such an amazing, powerful work of art. And that's why I loved it. A couple of podcasts back, I said I don't like art that is in an art gallery. And I think one of the most awesome outside of the gallery art pranks that was ever pulled was the distributor or the studio of Spring Breakers deciding to show this surreal non or semi non-narrative art movie in like big mainstream theaters and not art house theaters. And I think that was just like a punking like America, like on the biggest level ever. And I love that. It's an extremely beautiful movie. I recommend seeing it in a theater. The colors are amazing. I think with this movie, you can't throw that argument at Harmony Korine that he doesn't know how to make a movie, that it's just a bunch of junk all thrown together. I think this movie is obviously very carefully constructed. And I would say, too, that like Nashville can't disown Harmony Korine any longer, right? If you look at his body of work, he's the most creative, daring filmmaker in America alive today. And I think now I know how Baltimore feels about John Waters. So a close second for me, another like really misunderstood movie was Only God Forgives. And the only reason I even bring it up is because it actually dealt with the same themes as Spring Breakers, like race relations and sexualization of women and violence, and actually had the same color palette. And Cliff Martinez did the scores for both movies. So Spring Breakers, go for it.
I actually have it checked out right now to watch. I just haven't had time yet.
You're going to hate that movie.
Nice.
You know, I don't think I'll like this.
I saw the previews for it, and it didn't look horrible.
It's pretty horrible.
You're going to hate it.
Yeah, I mean...
Nice.
I don't know. You watch it, you tell me.
Okay.
Yeah, because the one thing about it, too, for real, I mean, it was it rated NC-17? It's...
That was
all. It looks rowdy.
The fact that that movie isn't rated NC-17 is like why the rating system is screwed up, if there should be a rating system. I don't know. It's not a movie for kids. And I think one of the things that isn't said in America, and this goes into this whole sexualization of girls things, that movie is about pornography. It's about the aesthetics of pornography, right? So it's a comment on that. So... I think a lot of like mainstream critics aren't willing to go there to say the word pornography, but that's actually what it's about. I don't think that you'll like it.
Going on record.
But maybe you will.
Hey, maybe I'll surprise you. You never know.
Yeah. And also, you know, Cliff Martinez's score for Only God Forgives, not Spring Breakers, but the score that he wrote for Only God Forgives is what I hoped that Daft Punk's score for Tron Legacy would have been. Okay, there I said it. I had to. I'm done. Anybody see Spring Breakers and like it? Anybody see Spring Breakers and hate it? Awesome. Okay.
Clint, just me and you.
Clint put up his hand. I don't know what that meant. What
did
you think? What'd you think?
Oh, I love it. No, it's...
Yeah.
Second best movie of the year.
Is Nashville trying to disown Harmony Korine?
No,
I was quite sure where that comment.
When I first moved here, yes, but now he's.
You think it's, since he moved back to town or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, no, everybody loves him now. It's yeah, no.
Yeah, they had some big tribute to him at the Belcourt like a year or two after I got here. There was like movies that he handpicked that he really liked.
But that's the Belcourt's different than, like, say, Chamber of Commerce or something. Like, if you think about the way the city, like, totally bent over backwards to, like, for the Nashville TV show, which wasn't on any of our best of the year lists. I'm making enemies. I need to just stop talking. But, like, for instance, like, because Harmony has made so many controversial movies and arguably portrayed the city, like, in a bad light, arguably, I don't know if you did or, you know, I think Gummo could have been made in any town in America, right? I'm from Pennsylvania, right? Okay. That all the scenes in Gummo could have been in the town where I'm from in Pennsylvania. I think that, you know, they probably wouldn't, like, give him tax breaks to make one of his movies here. But maybe I'm reading into that too much.
He doesn't have Connie Britton, though.
Exactly. I shouldn't make assumptions. Though, if, like, Hayden, what's her name?
Pantier.
Was in Spring Breakers, that would have been interesting. Maybe we should stop that.
Yeah, she'll always be the cheerleader.
I was going to say, she's the cheerleader, you know? Yeah, you got to save the cheerleader.
If you save her, then the world's okay. Mm-hmm.
She was actually on my soap opera before she was the cheerleader.
What's your soap opera?
Guiding Light.
Cheerleader.
She was a Spalding.
The only one I ever watched was General Hospital.
Oh, no, wrong channel.
You know, there used to be, they had that remote control, the old MTV game show. They had like a computer game. That I played so much that I memorized all the answers.
Nice.
And one of those, like, you know, the family at General Hospital was called the Scorpios. So I watched it specifically so I could see if there's any Scorpios left, because that's the best soap opera name ever. There's a guy with a big eye patch named Scorpio. Come on.
Days of Our Lives. Beau and Hope. Okay, we're done.
See, wrong channel. No. Dude, you're seeing the wrong channel. You gotta watch CBS. Although nothing's left on CBS anymore, so you're gonna rest less.
We're gonna cut this part, but. I used to come home from school right when Santa Barbara was on, which is like this California-themed soap opera, I think, on NBC, whatever days of life. But like the opening credits was one of those like 80s like woman's body as landscape with the sun coming down in the back. Like I'd come home to that when I was like 5 years old, 6 years old every day, and that would be on the TV, and I'd be like, that's just a really pleasant memory. Like I didn't realize what was happening at the time, but now it's like tattooed on my brain.
I came home and watched Thundercats, so.
Oh, I like Thundercats.
Same reason?
Yeah. That's right. Well, you know, Chitara. Yeah.
Yeah, we're done.
We're doing television.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do TV. We're not done. We're not done.
But wait, there's more.
There's so much more. Our favorite TV shows of the year. I don't have any.
I'm going to throw a shout out to Leverage. The fifth and final season, it's very sad, came out this year, which we just got in at the library. Very good TV show, kind of a ragtag bunch of con people, con men. It's really good if you haven't ever watched it. I think we just reordered season one, too, because it was missing for a while. So now start with season one, watch Leverage. You'll thank me.
I never binge-watched television. However, last November, I had an upper respiratory infection, homesick from work, and I've heard of this show called Orphan Black, which is on BBC America on demand. And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. I'll just watch one episode. Well, I wound up watching all 10 episodes in a row. I had to see what happened next. I was totally engrossed, and one of the reasons I was totally engrossed is because Orphan Black stars, and I hope I say her name right, Tatiana Maslany, I'm sure I didn't, plays Sarah Manning, who sees a woman who looks just like her on a subway platform. The woman jumps to her death, and Sarah takes her purse. Well, just to cut to the chase, the woman on the subway platform was not her long-lost sister, but her clone. Let the fun begin. So it's a great show. We have it on DVD, and I just hope there's no sophomore slump because I'm really looking forward to the new season. It's one of the few shows that I'm actually looking forward to. So Orphan Black, BBC America. Go team.
See, and if I were choosing the ending credit theme, it would be I Think I'm a Clone Now by Weird Al Yankovic.
It's a catchy tune.
I don't watch lots of TV, so I had to pick a show that ended in January. 30 Rock. Oh, 30 Rock. Take me. It was awesome. It starred, what's her name, Tina Fey as Liz Lemon, the a producer, showrunner, whatever, of a terrible sketch show on NBC. And Alec Baldwin is like the big wig studio executive guy. It was hilarious. You should totally see it.
And I couldn't watch it. Like, I tried to when it came out because I love Tina Fey, but I hate Alec Baldwin apparently more than I love Tina Fey. So.
Yeah, but the more I got to the show, the more I found out more about what Alec Baldwin is like in real life. Oh. He's like a terrible person.
Yes, he's a horrible man.
So, you know, I try to distance myself, the art from the artist.
Lisa and I used to have Alec, when Lisa was on the show, like we used to have Alec Baldwin wars because she loves him. So.
Yeah. I think of being, you know.
You know, I always thought that they actually – in some ways, he was, like, playing himself mm-hmm. on the show. So that's how I yeah. kind of got over that. Was, like, so all these, like, bad things, arrogant and selfish and loudmouth. Like, I always thought that was, like, they always, like,
worked that into him.
Yeah, they, like, worked that into his character. So.
But that didn't make me like him more. I just wanted to punch him.
He was the bad guy.
In the face.
I mean, you know, that's the other thing, too, is, like, he was the villain. Like, he yeah. wasn't, like, yeah.
They kind of softened it up, too, by the end of the show. I mean, they became good friends and that sort of thing.
Hugs all around.
And then the show's over because there's no conflict.
Shh.
Okay. Oh, it's like moonlighting all over again.
I hate you guys.
I was going to talk about how Breaking Bad is a good show and it ended well. And if people are giving up on it, you should keep going.
I've never heard of that. What's that about?
That's probably all I should say. That's probably all I need to say.
All right.
Heisenberg.
Heat's on. Mike, go. Tickle My Fancy. Year-end Tickle My Fancy, or maybe just Tickle My Fancy for this month. Can we get it done in time?
So I was really excited that apparently Netflix announced that they're going to have 4 new Marvel-themed TV shows, because apparently this is comic book month for me, and they're all going to culminate in one big movie where, like, the 4 heroes in the 4 TV shows team up to have an Avengers-style attack, you know, to thwart an attack on New York City or something. Possibly. Who knows? And it sounded very exciting. The heroes including Iron Fist, Kung Fu Master, sticks his hand in a dragon's heart, makes his hand hard as iron. Yeah. And Luke Cage, Power Man, Hero for Hire. Yeah. And, Daredevil. Daredevil's back, but he's hopefully good now and not terrible Ben Affleck. And Jennifer Jones, a.k.a. Alias, a.k.a. I didn't read that comic, but I heard it was really, really good. And hopefully it's not as dark as what I heard the comic book was. Even though I thought the Purple Man always sounded like an amusing villain guy until I found out what he did to her. Who's next? Greg?
So you may have heard that James McBride won the National Book Award this year for The Good Lord Bird. He did this crazy thing where he's been playing at New York Public Library. So the book is about John Brown, who's, you know, the famous abolitionist. But he's been playing, like, some jazz spin-offs of the song, you know, the traditional folk songs about John Brown. And I think that's a really cool thing. You know, authors promoting their books through music. Anyway.
So James McBride's band that plays folk songs about John Brown. Which
in the
is,
style of jazz, which is, yes. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. I thought it was cool.
Which is what his last award-winning novel, The Good Lord Bird, is about.
Correct.
Awesome. I dig it. Okay. So for me, this is the year of getting sucked back into the maelstrom that is Star Trek fandom, all the things that are good and bad, and you all know the stereotypes of things that are good and bad about Star Trek, but I just want to give a shout-out to Will Wheaton's book, Just a Geek. Will Wheaton played Wesley Crusher, if you guys are not Star Trek fans, and this book was amazingly good. I was surprised at how good it was. Even on this podcast, I've sort of called him out as, like, is he just, you know, being the king of the uber geeks, like, as a career move? I don't think so. I have new respect for him as a writer, as author, as an actor. Just a Geek was really super good because, really, it's kind of a self-help book about, like, what to do when your life doesn't go the way that you want it to. At the center of the book is, I quit Star Trek to be a movie star, and I did not become a movie star. Now what am I going to do? And it is really, really real and personal and intense, and I liked it. You can stream it for free on Bandcamp, or you can buy a non-DRM copy for, I think, $10, $12. It's even better was he read the book himself, an actor reading his own book. He does a really good job, and he actually provides these commentaries on what he originally wrote before because they're all taken from blog entries on his blog. But then the version that he has posted now on Bandcamp he actually adds like commentaries to his commentaries, so things that happened inside the
He's a true nerd.
His own career and you know things that happened in the Star Trek fandom, things like that. So there's like you get basically two extra commentaries, and then at the very end of that, if you go to talk some nerdiness, him and his producer get into an hour-long talk just about the microphones they used, how they recorded it, what's the best way to record an audiobook. And that, you can stream that all for free or buy a copy, Just a Geek by Will Wheaton. Amanda, what you got?
First of all, Will Wheaton read my favorite all-time book ever, Ready Player One, on the audio, so he has practiced doing audiobooks. But so I am hereby, as of right this second, dubbing 2013 the year of glitter. Thanks to my wedding, I have glittered everything. I glittered flowers. I glittered tiles. I glittered books. I glittered my house. I glittered my front step accidentally, but it happens. I glittered my friend's shoes, which you've never really had fun to. You've glittered a pair of shoes before. And they did turn out cool, I have to say. So if you need something that you need glittered, come see me, especially if you need it in orange or purple or green. I have glitter. I will be happy to assist you. Happy New Year.
Have you ever glitter bombed anyone before?
Yes, my wedding invitations had glitter all over them, and one of my husband's coworkers like blew on it because he thought it was and it went everywhere. Mm-hmm. And his desk is still glittery to this day, and that's very awesome.
I was glitter bombed by her wedding invitation. Yes. Like, for sure.
Oh man!
So nice. it was exciting. And I kind of did that on purpose.
So. Could you glitter a copy of Mariah Carey's movie Glitter?
I could, but the wormhole might suck me in.
That's right. Oh.
Will Wheaton might have to come save me.
It'd be immeasurably better with.
So it can't get
be
worse.
Be covered in, yeah.
I want to make that movie, and then I want like an animated version of Kierkegaard to like come in from out of frame and like lick his finger and be like, I would like to make a point. Bill.
I don't really have anything, just something I'm looking forward to in the new year. They're finally going to release on Blu-ray the movie Sorcerer, directed by William Friedkin, written by Waylon Greene. A fantastic movie that came out the same year, the same summer that Star Wars came out. And it's a rethinking, it's not a remake, but a rethinking of Wages of Fear. And doubly excited about it. We're going to show it here in our auditorium probably in September. And we've got another great interview with the film editor of the movie, Bud Smith. Talks a lot about it behind the scenes. Doing a little early plug, but that's something I'm looking forward to in my tickle my fancy.
Awesome. Epic year-end show, guys. Thank you very much. You all did really good.
Thanks. Thank I practiced.
I couldn't be there.
Need a little streamer thing to blow.
So people keep calling me out on this thing I do where I forget to mention people who are not here. So
we kind of
have, you know, the rolling cast, right, for the podcast, including me. You know, there's been a couple episodes when I haven't been here. So Amanda was here, I didn't say anything. Mike was here, I didn't say anything. I introduced Greg, and then Greg wasn't here the next week, I didn't say anything. So forgive me if I don't do that. You know, we're just like, hey, you're around, come do the podcast. People down on the street, you know.
Never know who we're going to pull in.
Exactly. People on the computers, you know, we're like, hey, come
some
do the podcast.
Some weird guy shelving books.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is calling you out on this, out of curiosity?
I called him out.
You, okay.
Yeah.
I think Mike, exactly.
So
I brought it up.
And then also my own verbal incompetence, my own verbal incoherence caused a few minutes of a conversation that we had to be cut, and I was like, boy, he's the first one on, and then we cut him like,
oh,
you know, how mean, right?
So, that podcast.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that something that I said was cut.
I timed my
minute. And I was saying it to you, and then the next week you went around, and I was like, oh, no. But anyway. So, in other words, don't worry about it if I don't mention it if you're not here. And
we'll just make fun of you later, Brian. It's fine.
Heart.
Okay. And then last January, we did things we're looking forward to this year. So really fast here at the end, we're going to go through that list. We're going to say thumbs up, thumbs down. So, okay, Dr. Sleep by Stephen King.
I didn't read it.
Thumbs up.
And you guys who weren't in the podcast last year, you can chime in or you can just
I've heard it's good. Thumbs up.
You can just feel lonely. I don't know.
It's okay, an Barnes & Noble commercial.
Okay, so that was Crystal's pick. She told me thumbs up. Oh, by the way, Crystal's not here today.
This is over.
It's funny, too, because this is actually the end of the podcast. So anyway. So Nosferatu by Joe Hill. Crystal gave that a thumbs up.
Next, I started that. I didn't finish it. I didn't know what that says about the book.
Yeah. Crystal isn't here. She has a Stephen King bias. That's all I'll say about that. Okay. Next volume in the Divergent trilogy by Veronica Roth.
Was that the third one? Because that was thumbs up. Yeah, that was good.
Okay. The Dying Grass by William Volman. That was not published this year. But one of the things that Volman did publish was an article in Harper's about what it's like when you get put on an FBI watch list. And so let me tell you, your mail gets opened, all your mail for the rest of your life. And someone that he knew turned him in for being the Unabomber. And even though he wasn't the Unabomber, the FBI and the NSA made his life hell. So, okay.
So whose pick was that, Brian?
That was my pick.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Thumbs up.
It's a good article. So, Dead Ever After by Charlene Harris.
Thumb sideways.
Okay.
Crystal would probably be in on that, too.
Right.
Yeah, it was fine, but it needed to end, so.
Ever After by Kim Harrison.
I didn't read that one yet.
Okay.
I started it, but I didn't get very far.
Okay. A Wrinkle in Time by Hope Larson. You know, I didn't read that yet either, but seriously, that story with that artist together, it had match made in heaven. Okay? As a matter of fact, I actually thought that I was like, I know what this is going to be. I don't need to read it. But I still recommend it.
So good. Okay,
yeah, so, okay. So a new Civil Wars album.
Thumb sideways. Mike, did you listen to any of it yet?
So I hadn't gotten around to it, so
okay.
I'll draw my thumb.
I've listened to it a little bit, but it's not as good as the first one.
And that was the one that's titled Civil Wars.
The Civil Wars,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Confused.
Sideways.
New Straight No Chaser album.
I don't remember.
Okay. Not good, huh?
They just had a new Christmas one come out, too, that I haven't downloaded yet. Okay. So.
Amok by Adams for Peace. This is an art rock supergroup led by Tom York of Radiohead.
I never even heard of this.
That was Crystal's pick. She gave it a thumbs up. She said it lived up to the hype. Bish Bosh by Scott Walker. And neutral. Felt like continuation.
Thumbs up for Clint.
Felt like a continuation of The Drift. I can't say that I gave this enough deep listenings because truly Scott Walker's records are really dense and you really have to like take time and listen to them many times to get what he's getting at. So
Pish Posh and Bish Bosh.
Clint said it was...
I've only started really listening to it at the end of the year here. I mean, I kind of listened to it at the beginning and then put it away. Yes, it is...
Yeah. Like, late period Scott Walker, it's not Tilt. That's all, okay?
Tilt's a great
album. I had no idea that he was still making records, to be honest.
They're not like the ones from the 60s. New season of American Horror Story... Me and Crystal both just started watching that, so I don't know. And that would actually be, for us, I think that would actually be the second season. So the second season just came out on Netflix. So I've watched one episode so far. So I don't know. Oz the Great and Powerful with James Franco.
Big thumbs down.
Oh, double.
Double.
Double thumbs down.
I kind of liked it. Thumb sideways.
Okay, I don't know.
Shout out to Nashville puppeteer Philip Huber for his work on that.
That was great. I love that movie.
Except for him. He gets a thumbs up.
That's right.
The puppet work.
The writers needed awesome. A little bit of love. Yeah.
Good Bruce Campbell cameo.
Yeah.
Hey, Spring Breakers, also starring James Franco. Yeah, that was awesome, and I talked about that earlier.
I don't remember that.
Okay. On the Road, starring Viggo Mortensen as William S. Burroughs. I didn't see it. I didn't see that. Hannibal.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was Crystal's pick, and that was fantastic, too. Star Trek Into Darkness with Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan.
I thought I was going to off myself before the movie was over.
He's that bad?
Yeah. Okay, but I liked it, but I haven't seen the original Khan, so I can't compare and contrast. So Apparently, I'm in the minority.
Amazingly amazing.
Traveled territory.
So Crystal, neutral, right? She was neutral. My thing after seeing the first Star Trek reboot was that J.J. Abrams ruined Star Trek, but now that I'm watching Enterprise, I realize that no, Enterprise ruined Star Trek, so it wasn't J.J. Abrams. But okay. And then new episodes of Key and Peele, Crystal doesn't know because she didn't have time to watch any. She just watched the highlights on YouTube.
Okay.
And, but it's funny, though, today, just like last night, like the rapper Riff Raff and one of the guys from Key and Peele like made a deal that Riff Raff is going to come be on the show. Sure. Good times.
Cool. Good times.
That'll be funny because he'll be the butt of the joke, but he won't know that he is the butt of the joke. What were you going to say, Mike?
I was just going to say,
Were you going to say something about my Enterprise diss? Were you going to say something about my J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot diss?
Those are some good disses, though.
You can. Okay, if you have a differing opinion, we can be multi-something.
I kind of liked Enterprise, but not enough to actually keep up with it. I was like, well, this is an interesting, you know, I liked the old school Star Trek. This is pretty cool, but then it's like, none of the characters really grabbed me.
Yeah.
It was kind of there. And the original J.J. Abrams reboot I thought was way better.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
But I just thought, you know, he's got good actors there. He just doesn't let them act.
Yeah.
Or I think they could take over, but it's like they've got to fill the screen with so much noise and battle.
And the plot twists weren't that great.
Plus, it was kind of a cheat. I just thought, don't remake Wrath of Khan, which is what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like those movies, but yes, casting was amazing. Like Zachary Quinto as...
Yeah, the casting.
As Spock was awesome, and it was good stuff.
It was good to see Peter Weller. It's just... You know, been better. Could have built a better script.
I want, you know, see, now that got me on Star Trek. Benedict Cumberbatch is some like evil version of the data android, like the next generation data android, but he's like lore, he's evil. Just work with his face, I think.
I found it odd that they like, you know, find the Botany Bay pods way earlier, yet like Khan is startlingly white now.
I have no idea what you're talking about. For more information, you can go to
la.
www. Come on, team.
Dot.
Library. Wait. Yes. Dot. Library.
Dot.
Nashville.
Dot.
Org.
Dot. Dot. Dot.
Org. All right. Something like that. You know how to do it. Hey, if that didn't make any sense, what can you do, Bill?
Google Nashville Public Library.
All right.
Or you can listen to our 18 old podcast where we say it right on the end.
Or the 20 others where we forget to say anything at all.
Those are my favorite.
Awesome.
Oh, I just want to say you had another great New Year's Eve party at your house, Brian.
All right. Yeah. Woo!